The committee has expressed concern that the pandemic is being mischaracterized as coming to an end when it's nowhere near finished.
That is just one of the concerns expressed by the World Health Organization. It's Friday, July 16th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the Australian Population Center is again locked down. A Chinese surveillance ship is being tracked. U.S. Senate passes legislation to ban the import of products from China's Xinjiang region. Pakistan wants no more Afghan refugees. Taliban seizes a major border crossing. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The World Health Organization Emergency Committee warned Thursday that concern about the COVID-19 virus has not come to an end. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus told a meeting in Geneva that there is more to come.
The committee has expressed concern that the pandemic is being mischaracterized as coming to an end when it's nowhere near finished. It has also warned about the strong likelihood for the emergence and global spread of new and possibly more dangerous variants of concern that may be even more challenging to control.
That announcement was further bad news as several countries battle a new wave of infections spanned by new variants, namely the Delta variant, which was first identified in India. But the WHO committee warned that worse could lie ahead, pointing to the strong likelihood for the emergence and global spread of new and possibly more dangerous variants of concern that may be even more challenging to control. That was not the only major news coming from that meeting. The WHO chief called Thursday for China to cooperate better in the next phase of investigations into the origins of the pandemic, demanding more access to raw data. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus told reporters that the UN Health Agency had developed a framework for moving forward with the second phase of the vital investigation into where COVID-19 came from.
Knowing, understanding what happened can help us to prevent the problem from happening in the future. But second, I think we owe it to the millions who suffered and to the millions who died really to understand what happened. And I hope there will be better cooperation. And we have continued the engagement with China and also with member states. And there will be better cooperation to get into the bottom of what happened.
He pointed to several problems during the initial probe. The UN Health Agency has been facing intensifying pressure for a new, more in-depth investigation of COVID-19's origins. The WHO only managed to send a team of independent international experts to Wuhan in January, more than a year after COVID-19 first surfaced there in late 2019, to help probe the pandemic origins. But in their long-delayed report published in late March, the international team and their Chinese counterparts drew no firm conclusions, instead ranking a number of hypotheses according to how likely they believed they were. You can find out more about this story at voanews.com and our many digital platforms. These are some of the stories you'll find at voanews.com. Operation Allies Refuge to begin airlifting Afghans amid U.S. withdrawal. India internet law adds to fears over online speech and privacy. A powerful roadside bomb targeting security forces killed two soldiers in southwest Pakistan. Myanmar funeral services overwhelmed as COVID toll mounts. China missing from the itinerary for a U.S. diplomat's second Asia tour. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. The Australian state of Victoria was ordered into a five-day lockdown Thursday following a spike in COVID-19 infections, joining Sydney as the country's two main population hubs battle an outbreak of the highly contagious Delta variant. Reuters' Libby Hogan reports.
Sydney residents woke to some good news on Thursday. COVID-19 cases slowed down after days of rising numbers. But it is still not enough to lift the lockdown, warned New South Wales State Premier Gladys Berejiklian.
Whilst the case numbers are bouncing around, we are seeing a stabilisation. They are not growing exponentially.
But she also warned that infections could rise again due to the growing number of people with the Delta strain moving around in the community, particularly in Sydney's southwest. Two deaths have been reported out of the city, the first for the country this year. Meanwhile, Victorian state capital Melbourne is preparing to follow Sydney into a lockdown after a team of furniture movers travelled from New South Wales through the state of Victoria while infectious. Just over 12% of Australia's adult population of around 20.5 million have been fully vaccinated. Officials have pointed to changing medical advice for vaccines and supply shortages for its sluggish inoculation drive.
Libby Hogan reporting. Indonesia, the world's fourth largest nation, is the latest hotspot for the fast-moving COVID-19 Delta variant. The nation reported more than 54,570 new coronavirus infections Wednesday, a new single-day record along with 991 deaths. Hospitals on Java Island are overflowing with infected patients and residents scrambling to find oxygen tanks to treat family members isolating at home. Indonesia's rising daily COVID-19 rates have begun to outstrip that of India, where the variant was first detected. India endured a disastrous outbreak earlier this year with a peak of more than 400,000 daily cases in early May, now down to about 40,000. India's popular holiday destinations are crammed with visitors with what some have termed revenge travel, the urge to vacation following long shutdowns. But as Anjana Pasricha reports, authorities warn that the massive holiday crowds could reverse the gains made recently in what had been the world's second worst-hit country.
It's vacation time for young and old visitors crowding Shimla, India's most popular hill station.
I came to enjoy an outing with my friends after being at home so long because of COVID.
Tens of thousands of tourists have been heading to the country's hill towns in recent weeks as COVID-19 infections decline following a second wave of the pandemic. It has been termed revenge travel, a buzzword for the urge to take a vacation after a year of stress, anxiety and isolation as cities remained shut.
My exam were cancelled recently due to COVID, and I felt the need to go out. It's very necessary for mental health, though I know lots of people gather here.
The tourists, often without masks, are causing alarm in a country where super spreader events, such as political rallies and religious gatherings earlier this year, had contributed to letting the highly transmissible Delta variant rip through the country. After videos of crowded holiday destinations went viral on social media, top health officials warned that recent gains could be jeopardized.
If we don't take precautions, we are giving the virus an opportunity to infect us. It is with great difficulties that cases have declined, but this can be reversed because we have not won the victory over the virus.
With just over 5% of the country fully inoculated, health experts say the rush of tourists could bring on an early third wave. That has led Prime Minister Narendra Modi to warn against overcrowding of holiday destinations. A pandemic-weary public acknowledges the risks.
It could be problematic, but a person cannot stay shut in the house.
Revenge travel is music to the ears of tourism-dependent businesses.
10% GDP.
10% of the gross domestic product in this state comes from tourism. If we have total restrictions, then it is a huge loss to people's livelihoods because they work in the hotel industry.
In Shimla, such people are everywhere, like this restaurant owner who had to cut his staff due to lockdowns.
My work was down to 20%. Now I am back to about 60 to 70%.
India is grappling with the dilemma the pandemic poses to many countries, the need to open up a battered economy, even as the threat of surging infections looms large. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Happening now in Asia, International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach said on Thursday there was zero risk of Games participants infecting Japanese residents with COVID-19, as cases there hit a six-month high in the host city. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We appreciate you spending your time with us on VOA Asia. Australian authorities are tracking a Chinese surveillance ship that's expected to monitor large-scale military exercises involving the United States off the coast of Queensland. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
Australia said Wednesday it fully expected a ship of this class to arrive in our region during military exercises with the United States. Officials have said they'd planned for its presence. The Auxiliary General Intelligence Chinese ship is expected to monitor the Talisman Sabre 2021 war games that officially began Wednesday. They're designed to strengthen a decades-old military alliance and boost combat readiness. The drills include amphibious landings, ground force manoeuvres, urban operations, air combat, and maritime operations. It's the largest bilateral training exercise between Australia and the US. In an official Defence Force video, Australian Air Commodore Stuart Bellingham said other countries were also taking part in the drills in Queensland State.
In addition to the United States, this year will involve participating forces from Canada, Japan, the Republic of Korea, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom. Due to COVID-19, you'll notice fewer international participants this year compared to the past.
The Chinese electronic spy vessel is expected to closely monitor the Talisman Sabre war games during the next 2 weeks. In 2019, the same type of ship was also tracked during military manoeuvres in Australia. Military analyst and former Australian Defence Department Secretary Hugh White told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that such surveillance has become commonplace.
This is the kind of thing we should expect to see happen and expect to see increasingly happen as the Asia-Pacific, the Indo-Pacific becomes increasingly a theatre of strategic rivalry as it is.
The Chinese ship is expected to remain outside Australian territorial waters as it monitors the multinational warfighting games over the next 2 weeks. It is, however, expected to be within Australia's exclusive economic zone, where it's entitled to be if it's not carrying out any economic activity. Australian officials have said they don't expect its presence to impede the war drills in Queensland. The vessel is scheduled to arrive off Australia on Friday. Relations between Australia and its largest trading partner, China, have deteriorated in recent years over various commercial and geopolitical disputes. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Hong Kong's press freedoms are in tatters, says the city's main journalist union, adding it feared fake news laws were on their way. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. The U.S. Senate passed legislation Wednesday to ban the import of products from China's Xinjiang region, the latest effort in Washington to punish Beijing for what U.S. officials say is an ongoing genocide against Uyghurs and other Muslim groups. Reuters' Jason Albano reports.
The U.S. Senate passed a bill on Wednesday banning products from China's Xinjiang region. It's the latest effort by Washington to punish Beijing for what U.S. officials say is an ongoing genocide there against Uyghurs and other Muslim groups. China denies mistreating Uyghurs and says the camps are vocational training centers needed to fight extremism. Under the current rule, the import of goods into the U.S. can be banned if there is reasonable evidence of forced labor. The bill assumes goods manufactured in Xinjiang are made with forced labor until proven otherwise and certified by U.S. authorities. The Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act was passed in the Senate by unanimous bipartisan consent. It was now passed the House of Representatives before being sent to the White House for President Joe Biden to sign into law. It was not immediately clear when that might take place. Republican Senator Marco Rubio, who co-authored the bill, called on the House to act quickly. In a statement, he wrote, "We will not turn a blind eye to the CCP's ongoing crimes against humanity, and we will not allow corporations a free pass to profit from those horrific abuses." The bill's other co-author, Democrat Jeff Merkley, also said, "No American consumers should be inadvertently purchasing products from slave labor." Democratic and Republican aides expect the measure would get strong support from the House after it approved a similar measure nearly unanimously last year. Rights groups and Western officials have long maintained that Xinjiang authorities have facilitated forced labor by detaining around 1 million Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities since 2016.
Jason Albano with that story. Making headlines in Asia, Bangladesh is to start giving coronavirus vaccinations to some of the 850,000 Rohingya refugees who fled across the border from Myanmar, according to officials. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the security situation in Afghanistan is deteriorating. Some fear it could lead to a civil war. In the 1990s, a similar conflict forced millions of Afghans to flee into neighboring countries, including Pakistan, which has hosted some 3 million Afghan refugees for decades. But this time, Pakistan is far more reluctant to take on more refugees, as VOA's Aisha Tanzim reports from Islamabad.
Jeeva Khawas was only 4 when she came to Pakistan in the 1990s as an Afghan refugee. More than 2 decades later, she now feels more at home in Pakistan than the country of her birth.
That time I was a child, so I don't remember that much. But after that, I complete my matric from here in Pakistan, then college, and now I'm doing MPhil from university. And beside that, I'm doing job.
Unlike Khawas, Afsar Khan was born in a refugee camp and spent his entire life here. He works at a vegetable market for only a few dollars a day.
We want other countries to cooperate in the peace process so that peace is achieved in Afghanistan and we can return to our homeland. We are sick and tired of living in poverty as a refugee.
Some 3 million Afghan refugees live in Pakistan. Because of violence and insecurity in their home country, most say they cannot return. But if the deteriorating situation in Afghanistan leads to civil war, as some fear, millions more Afghans may be forced to flee their homes. This time, Pakistan is feeling less generous.
We are willing to help, but we are in no position to take in new refugees this time around. The international forces and the UN should make arrangements for them inside Afghanistan.
As a backup option, Pakistani officials say they will set up camps at the border, but they're adamant this time they will not let refugees into mainland Pakistan. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
Taliban fighters in Afghanistan seized control of a major border crossing with Pakistan Wednesday in the Afghan town of Wesh, opposite the Pakistani town of Chaman. This report is produced by Chris Dignam.
Taliban fighters in Afghanistan on Wednesday took control of one of the main border crossings with Pakistan, perhaps the most strategic objective they have captured so far in a rapid advance across the country as U.S. forces pull out. A video released by the Taliban shows its white flag with black Quranic verse flying in place of the Afghanistan flag above the Friendship Gate at the border crossing in the Afghan town of Wesh, Although the video cannot be definitively dated, civilians and Pakistani officials confirmed on Wednesday that the Taliban had taken control of the crossing.
After 2 decades of the brutality of Americans and their puppets, this gate and the district were captured by the Taliban. The strong resistance of the Mujahideen and its people forced the enemy to leave this area. As you can see, that's the Islamic Emirate flag, the flag that thousands of Mujahideen shed their blood to raise.
Later, an unidentified Taliban militant carrying a firearm claims residents were, quote, crying with joy when they overtook the Friendship Gate.
We have been ordered not to kill the soldiers and to surrender them. Our request to the soldiers is to have mercy on themselves and surrender. Our leader's order is a general amnesty, and the soldiers will be forgiven and will not face any problems. They have seen what we have done to them. We could have killed them, but we did not.
The Taliban have in recent days seized other major border crossings in the north and west. U.S. President Joe Biden has announced he is pulling out all U.S. troops by August, and American forces left their main base in the country 2 weeks ago. U.S. officials told Reuters the United States will send charter flights later this month to start evacuating around 2,500 Afghans who worked as interpreters for the U.S. government and whose lives are now at risk.
Chris Dignam reporting. Guernsey's Auction House in New York is auctioning off pieces of music history this week. Evgeny Maslov has the story. It's narrated by Anna Rice.
New York-based auction house Guernsey's calls this event a century of music. On the auction block, guitars owned by music legends like Paul McCartney, Eddie Van Halen, Bo Diddley, and Eric Clapton. Even musical instruments played by a politician.
Believe it or not, this saxophone was played by Bill Clinton on the evening he was inaugurated president at the gala presidential ball in Washington, D.C.
Arlen Ettinger, president of the Guernsey's Auction House, says he's proud of every single musical gem of this collection.
And speaking of Eddie Van Halen, here is one of his most famous guitars from the 1980s, known as a Striper. It was said that Eddie himself did the stripes, put on tape, painted the thing, took the tape off, and there you have the white stripes.
Here is Bill Clinton's saxophone with the autographs of Michael Jackson, Jack Nicholson, and Goldie Hawn. Also for sale are objects from the Woodstock Musical Festival, ranging from road signs to stage covering.
On the grounds of Woodstock was a hand-painted big 4 foot by 8 foot, 1.5 by nearly 3 meter hand-painted directional sign, map, saying, you are here, the stage is there, the outhouses are over there, the pond where you can go swimming is there. And it was very beautifully done. And there was only one of them. We have that. We have sections of the stage of Woodstock, big pieces of the wooden stage. And as I said a moment ago, we have hundreds of the original photographic transparencies, the original photographs and the camera used by the photographer chosen to be on the stage at Woodstock. So pictures of Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jerry Garcia, Crosby, Stills.
Guernsey's Auction House specializes in more unusual objects like these. All in all, over 1,000 pieces are being sold in the A Century of Music auction. Tom Crandall, who owns a vintage guitar store, came to take a look.
The banjos caught my attention because I think it's an interesting and very deep collection, right? Also, the parlor guitars are unusual. You just don't see that many of them. A lot of them didn't survive. They're not terribly valuable, but they're still interesting.
Officials say because of the pandemic, the auction will take place online and by phone. For Evgeny Maslov in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, Chris Cascao, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Enjoy the day ahead.